Hey everyone, and welcome to SPED Homeschool Conversations. We are glad you are with us here tonight, and we are on a month where we're talking about health, health of your family, health of your kids, health of yourself, but we're talking about behavioral health tonight, which maybe doesn't fit in that category for you, but we want to make it fit in that category, because especially with kids who have struggles and learning struggles, behavior sometimes comes into that whole mix. And tonight I'm delighted to have my guest here with me. Her name is Needy Patel, and she is with Cred Rewards. Welcome, Needy, and welcome to our show, and thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So we're going to talk tonight about how parents can empower children to self-regulate. And I know I've got a lot of questions for you, but I also want to let our guests know, you can add your questions too. If you have a child who has maybe some behavioral issues, you already know what self-regulation is, and you're going, we've been dealing with that and we haven't conquered it, definitely throw those into the feed, whether you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, or Periscope. We can respond to you in all those places. And I also want to thank Knotgrass History for sponsoring this episode of SPED Homeschool Conversations. We'll hear more about them about halfway through. But just want to welcome you all to the broadcast, and make sure you share this post, this link with some friends and invite them to come join us. So so as we're getting started, Needy, tell us a little bit about yourself and what led you to create Cred Rewards, and maybe tell us a little bit about what Cred Rewards is if people don't know what your company or your app does.
Yeah. So let me actually start there, because that puts my whole background in context. So Cred Rewards is, at its essence, it's a skill building and rewards tool that parents and teachers can use with their children and students. And that's the kind of crux of the app and website. My background is I'm a parent of students with special needs. I am previously a teacher of sixth grade and seventh grade and eighth grade. So middle school teacher. Uh-huh. In a school that was considered a high need school in an urban district. So we saw a lot of students with varied needs, whether or not they had formally an IEP or not. Mm-hmm. The needs were very varied in my classroom. And then previous to that, I had a career in technology. So I worked at HP, Samsung, and Apple on the business side, really thinking about kind of how to make technology help solve larger world problems. Yeah. And so if you kind of mix all of those things in a bucket and you shake them up, you realize that the bigger problems that I've been dealing with as an adult are, how do I motivate my own kids? How do I motivate kids in my classroom? You put in a little bit of, you know, technology can help you solve things. Mm-hmm. And that's where I started talking to former colleagues, former friends, to say, I've been doing this research around adolescent motivation and child motivation, but how do we put it in a technology format that can be engaging for kids, but also easy to use for parents and teachers, so that it can start to get implemented and really support adults in motivating their kids and helping them through certain behavioral challenges by giving them autonomy.
Yeah. I love that word you said, support, as for the parents, because oftentimes we think of motivating kids and we don't think about the support that we need, but it is taxing on us.
Absolutely.
To motivate our kids, and it is something that we need support for. So I just wanted to point that out. That's awesome. So first off, I'd love for you to address what actually is self-regulation, and then the difference between a bribe and a reward, because I think a lot of parents get into that context of, well, I'm just bribing them to really behave. Shouldn't they just want to do this eventually? And I know we talked a little bit about this before the broadcast started, so I know you have a good answer.
Yeah. So the way that I would define self-regulation, and obviously I'm not a psychologist by training, so keep that in mind. But in the research that I've done, as well as the experts, including psychologists and behaviorists who I've talked to, self-regulation is really about developing the discipline to manage your own emotions and manage your own reactions to the things around you in order to meet your goals. And that, I think, is really important, because it's, when I say discipline, it's not something that people, even I mean, really anyone has naturally built in. You really have to develop it over time. And I think that's one of the big keys, is that it's not something that's just naturally there. You do have to develop it. And I think that's where kind of parents and adults kind of lean towards bribes or rewards to say, how do I kind of incentivize my kids to do certain things? And the way that I would differentiate a bribe versus a reward is, a bribe is really transactional. It's really about, you know, hey, can you be quiet for 10 minutes and I'll give you a cookie? That that is a bribe, right? That's saying,
we've all done it. That's why we're laughing.
No judgment about that. Mm-hmm. And especially now with a lot of parents who were not homeschoolers, but have children at home, and they're realizing, I need some system. Bribes are often what we turn to as parents. But even just shifting the language of that statement. So instead of, if you can just be quiet for 10 minutes, I'll give you a cookie. Two, let's practice being quiet and sitting quietly for 10 minutes today. And if you can do that, then you can earn a cookie. So there's a couple of differences in just the framing of that, where it becomes kind of a positive behavior reward. One, I said practice. So this helps kids understand that this is not something I'm doing once, but it's something I'm going to start to do over and over again to build something like a skill or a habit. So that's one piece. And I think the second piece is earn, because it's not, you're going to get a cookie. I give you a cookie. It's actually something that you are going to earn yourself. That cookie becomes yours as soon as you accomplish the skill or develop that skill. And I think
it's almost like you put it in this like little transactional box where, okay, it's kind of been agreed upon. Now it's on your side to open the other side of the box.
Exactly.
I've already put it in there with the trust that that's going to happen.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And I think, you know, even ideally you would do things where you're talking about the skills that the child wants to build and with the child developing that set. But even in that transactional moment, you can shift it from a bribe to more of a positive behavior skill building activity just by kind of language differentiation. Yeah. And those things do, I think, trigger different emotions and reactions in adults as well as children, and kind of reframes what I'm doing. I'm not getting a cookie because I'm quiet. I'm actually going to work on this skill. And then when I do things positively for myself, I earn benefits.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. I give a parenting talk on character, and I talk about a child who has not had any boundaries developed, like this flat piece of cardboard, and how you have this ping pong ball that can just roll around and rolls right off. But how when we train character, it's like taking a little Lego brick, and every time they do a right thing, it's like a Lego brick around the edge. But it takes a long time to build that up, and we expect kids just to all of a sudden have these really big walls, where they can control themselves. But it goes back to what you said about developing discipline. I love that. Practicing and building, you know, it's in that same mindset. And I think as a parent, if you can wrap yourself around the concept that this isn't a one-time thing where this one transaction is going to build these walls, you know, to the height of where this child is going to stop every time that they, you know, they're working on this behavior or whatever. It's a process.
It is. And I think, you know, one thing that I love that I've heard from a lot of different psychologists talk about in terms of childhood motivation, or how do you motivate kids to kind of start to build that discipline? There's two kind of big factors that I've heard, and you can kind of think about them as buckets. So one bucket is positive attention. If you don't give a child positive attention, their bucket's not filled, and they're going to go find it elsewhere. The second is autonomy. And with any child, even I have a toddler that's 3 years old, even with her, I have to give her autonomy in a day, because if I don't, she's going to take it at the least opportune time.
Exactly.
At dinner, when she has control of what goes in her mouth, and she's going to say, no, I'm not eating right now. And so, you know, even understanding those two things, I have to give her choices throughout the day to manage and learn self-regulation. Mm-hmm. That gives her the motivation to kind of keep making positive choices. When I say we're all sitting down to dinner, she's more willing to do that because she's had so many choices and positive reinforcement throughout the day.
Right. Yeah. That this is one thing. I can just not make a choice and just do. That's a really good point.
So I always think about these two buckets, and for all my kids, am I filling these buckets, or if I'm missing part of that bucket, they're going to take it somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that kind of goes on to my next question. It's, you know, talking about just rewards that create motivation. So what do you have to say to, like, parents who think that this is kind of a trap, that their child would need to have rewards in order to make wise choices? And I think you partially already answered that in just your last bucket description.
Peggy, I think the simplest answer is don't reward things that your kids are intrinsically motivated to do.
Yes.
And that's the simplest way to say it, because what you want to reward are either skills or habits that, for whatever reason, there is a barrier for your child to start on that path. And that's what you're trying to get over. You're trying to get over that barrier hump so that they start doing it a little bit and start gaining the muscle memory or the mental muscle memory to do something. And then as they build that habit, you actually do want to lay off the reward. You don't want to keep giving a reward for the same thing forever. You want to do it until that habit is formed, and then you want to lay off. And I think that's really important. Like, you know, I don't give my son rewards for playing Fortnite. That's something
exactly. It's rewarding in itself.
But to work on math for an extra 30 minutes a couple times a week, that is something that I'm trying to have him build. And for me, the mentality is, if he works on math for an extra 30 minutes a day, it's going to be annoying for him at first because he thinks he's bad at math. But as you work on math, you get a little bit better and you realize, oh, this isn't as hard as I thought it was last week, and I can do it a lot faster now. And so you're starting to actually build some of that intrinsic motivation. Right. So over time, I don't want to keep rewarding that. You know, I want to move on to another skill, whether it's social, emotional, or academic, that I can encourage him to develop on his own.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, we were even talking before the broadcast about this, how, you know, even we as adults build in motivations for ourselves for things, because there are some things that our kids will struggle with all the way through their school, and we may have to at some point motivate them in those areas just because they are tough. I mean, there are certain things that I always look in my list of to-dos, and I have to number them and say, okay, just get done with this, and then you can do this.
And then you can do this. You build in rewards as adults. Right. I used to do that when I went to the gym, as I was mentioning earlier. If I made it to the gym, then I would let myself buy, you know, something that I wanted to buy or something like that. And we just naturally do that for difficult things, for things that we have a barrier to accomplish.
Right.
And that's, I think, the one kind of key mindset to prevent it from, you're not going to overdo it if you're just focusing on those things that your child has a barrier to accomplish.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, that is so true. That's a great way to look at it. Would you talk a little bit about punishments and versus rewards and a family system? And now, I didn't even realize this growing up, but my family system was built around punishments. Yet I saw my parents as loving. But yet, what are the short and long-term effects of a punishment strategy versus a reward strategy?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I will be both honest and truthful. As a parent, I use punishments. It's something that I've been working with every new child, and I have a newborn now. So with every new child, I try to kind of lay off a little bit on the punishment and, you know, kind of shift the balance more towards that positive reinforcement. But it's still a journey that I'm on myself. You do see the benefits so clearly when you're able to shift that balance. But it's important. And I actually was doing some research around punishments. And what's really interesting about punishments is that learning from your mistakes is very complicated. And so, the typical answer of why you shouldn't do punishments is, you know, it's a negative orientation. It's focusing on the negatives versus the positives. All of those things are true. But I think actually the scientific background of it's very complicated to understand what you did wrong and why you're getting punished. So as a very simple example, if my toddler spills milk on the table and I say, hey, go to your room now that you spilled milk on the table. What did she do wrong there? Was it putting milk on the table to begin with? Was it that she was not focused on what she was doing and knocked it over again on accident? Was it the table that she wasn't supposed to put things on? You know, it's not clear where the mistake is. So I think especially for children who are still developing so much of their cognitive abilities, really understanding what they did wrong is very difficult in a punishment-oriented
discipline. There's so many variables involved in there.
So many variables.
You know, taking it back to the context of what you were talking about before with the rewards, it was very simplified and very, you know, categorized as to this is what specifically needs to happen, and then this is what will come about from that.
Exactly. And I think rewards then, like you just said, can do that. They can say, hey, you did this very specific thing, therefore you get this very specific thing, or you earned this very specific thing. So that link is made so very clearly in children's mind, whereas a punishment is like, well, what did I do wrong? What was I supposed to do? I'm not supposed to accidentally hit the milk. You know, how am I to prevent that?
Right.
I think, you know, that to me is one of the biggest drivers. And obviously, you know, as somebody that's also very passionate about positive parenting, there's a whole slew of research around you know, the shame and blame and what that does for long-term effects on the way children kind of perceive themselves and how they kind of go about the world. You know, in a punishment orientation, they're going to do just enough to not get punished, right? They're not really thinking about the bigger picture. They're just, oh, don't put the milk on that table because we get in trouble if we put milk on that table versus just drink milk at the dinner table. You know, like that's the only table they used to have the milk on.
Right.
So I think that's a very important aspect of punishment as well, the positive parenting kind of research.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. Amy made a comment based on what we were talking about before about, you know, how you said your daughter will come in at the most inopportune time if you don't give her enough choices earlier in the day. And she said, LOL, yes, the least opportune times.
We realize that even toddlers have moments where they can exert autonomy and influence your adult behavior. I mean, it's feeding time and bedtime. She's really in control. I can't force her to sleep. I can't force her to eat.
Exactly.
So she's the boss. And every other time I think I'm the boss, but if I overexert my authority, then she will she will exert hers when she has the chance.
Yes, that is so true. And Natalie said that, hey, I just shared. Thanks, Natalie, for sharing the broadcast and letting other people know about it. She's a dear. She's been a guest on our show before.
Oh, wonderful.
Let me go back to my questions now. I got kind of sidetracked.
Thanks for the comments, guys.
Yeah, definitely. And if you've got more questions, definitely put them in. We'd love to make you part of our conversation. So do you have any specific rules of thumb to follow when using rewards for good behavior? What about first getting started and applying this type of system and teaching children that positive behavior brings rewards while, I guess, you know, behavior that doesn't meet those requirements doesn't?
Yeah, and I think that's very important, as opposed to the punishment model of mm-hmm. if you do this, then you will get this punishment. It's more mm-hmm. oriented towards the positive. You want to earn, you want to build, you want to grow in this positive direction. And if you don't do those things, I'm not going to do anything. It's just that you're not going to be going in this trajectory, you know, and we want to be on a path towards positivity. Mm-hmm. So I do think that's a really important point, Peggy, that you made. Mm-hmm. So I have, in my mind, or at least with CRED, we came up with this model of five key rules of how to do rewards right from a lot of the research that stems from like psychology, like Bond and Skinner's operant conditioning. So we looked at a lot of research and sort of here's what we came up with.
Awesome.
The first is really what I mentioned before. You don't give rewards for things that people like, right? So I'm not going to reward my son for Fortnite. I'm not mm-hmm. going to reward my daughter for playing her iPad game. You know, these things are already intrinsically motivated. And what we want to do is motivate things that take her off her iPad or things that take him away from Fortnite or things like that. So that's rule number one, not things that there's natural and intrinsic motivation to mm-hmm. do. The second one is you want to make sure whatever it is that you're rewarding is not a one-time transaction, but you build in regular practice for it, mm-hmm. right? So it's, you can start it today, but the rewards are going to keep accruing as you practice or build this habit. Mm-hmm. And that's really important. It's also important for parents as well as educators and home educators to make it time bound, you know? So I don't want this to be, you know, just till you build it one day, but rather work with your child to develop, you know, a time frame. Do you want to journal for 20 minutes a day or 10 minutes a day for 3 days a week, for maybe let's practice it for 6 weeks? And the idea is not that the activity stops after that 6 weeks, but I'm going to stop rewarding it after 6 weeks. And so that's the kind of third point, is the reward needs to move to new skills or habits. Mm-hmm. So once you feel like, okay, my child has actually developed a routine around this habit, you pull the reward away and you start building a new skill or habit with that reward. So I think that's the kind of third one. The fourth one is similar to my toddler taking autonomy. You have to incorporate your children in planning this skill building activity. They need autonomy. They need choices, either in what skills they're building. So I'm a big fan of letting your child create the skills, let them write the language of the skill, let them pick the time frame, or the reward that they get. That leads me to my fifth very important thing, is rewards matter. And we all know this, right? So if I gave myself a reward, like if you go to the gym, you can eat broccoli. At least for me, that's not going to motivate me to go to the gym. But if I go to the gym and then I can maybe have that special dark chocolate I've been saving, that's a much more motivating activity for me. So rewards do matter. And that's why it's super important to let your kids be involved in what rewards matter to them. And that way you're also not giving it to them. They're really earning it because they developed it themselves.
Yeah. We've got a viewer that has a question. She said, "Nini, I struggle with knowing if or when to back down on rewards or increase the challenge. For example, I'm rewarding X numbers of gummy bears for X numbers of math facts correct in a minute. He moves very slowly and doesn't shoot for speed, which is a factor here with learning math facts. So as he builds speed, I feel the need to back down the number of gummies or sugar coma. Thoughts? My concern is the back down would in fact discourage him or off or frustrate him."
So I love that question, and it's super important. And if I might, I'm going to give a similar kind of analogy.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I told this to a lot of parents when they're thinking about what kind of skills they should develop in CRED rewards. And so a lot of parents want to do things like, if you get an A in math, I will give you, you know, then we'll give you this. The challenge is, let's say your child naturally gets D's or C's in math. If you put the bar for the reward at an A, that child might automatically be discouraged because they might think, well, I've never gotten an A in math. So how am I going to get, you know, even if you give me $1 million, I'm just not able to achieve that right now. So what you want to reward is effort versus outcome. And the effort that you want to build is, let's practice math for 30 minutes a day. And you're then practicing math facts over and over again. So they're getting rewarded for basically developing that practice, those study skills, all of that. And as they do that, that effort naturally results in improved outcomes in number of math facts correct in a minute, right? That naturally is going to improve that outcome. But the reward needs to be on the effort of practice, because it's achievable and you can motivate that behavior. It's hard to motivate outcomes because, yeah, if you just don't feel like it's, I'm going to get there, or, you know, it's too hard, you're naturally just not going to participate in the rewarding activity. So that's one thing that we've often told parents is focus on building effort into practicing something versus the final outcome that we all want at the end of the day.
But it's because I think that fear starts to come in, doesn't it? With I can just kind of picture how a student would feel about that, is that I'm fearful I can't make this, therefore I won't even try, versus I'm getting rewarded for trying, not whether or not my answer is right. And so I'll keep trying and see how it goes. And
Exactly. So
that's a great way to look at it. Cause we do, we often look at these things, like, you know, I even made some notes about, you know, just how we write like IEPs, and, you know, we set IEP goals, but that goal is based on the outcome, and yet the rewards and the motivation and the progress happens through practice. It doesn't happen by getting things right away. I mean, it's like a gradual increase. So that totally makes sense.
And as a teacher of students with IEPs, I would have to translate those IEP goals into, you know, I ran classroom rewards all the time. Teachers, I mean, I would say a majority of teachers have some form of rewards program that they run in their classroom. But you would have to translate them to what is it that I want them to try to do on a day-to-day basis? And if it was, you know, three-digit by three-digit multiplication, then the practice of three-digit by three-digit multiplication would garner points or whatever reward system I had. It wasn't accomplishing it. It was trying those types of problems would garner rewards.
It's interesting. Today I was just reading a book, and it said that of all the experts in the world, you know, across any kind of, like, anything, so you're talking sports, we're talking business, all these things, they said that that person had to do and keep doing that same thing, but then it had very little to do with natural talent. But the process of doing, and doing it 415 days, which is, you know, over a year straight, for them to hit the top levels of performance. And so there's so much truth in what you're talking about, is just this constant practice and repetition and building, and all of that is so necessary. And it's that discipline that we're giving our kids for life, not just for math facts, or, you know, to behave well when, you know, you need to have a conference call and they need to be quiet. But you're building life skills for them on how to stay diligent in through things that they may not enjoy doing.
Yeah, exactly. I actually, similarly, I was reading this book called The Dip. It's very fascinating. I recommend. It's very short. It's, I think, 100 pages or something. But it talks about, kind of, for adults, as you go through journeys doing difficult things, when you start on difficult things, like maybe a new business venture, what have you, you're elated and you have all this vision and excitement. So you're on kind of this uphill, you know, you're on this upward trajectory. But then what happens is reality sets in, and things get hard, and, you know, things are just naturally difficult. So you go through this period of a dip. And the argument this author makes is the successful people make it through that dip. But most people quit at the dip because it's just hard. And similar to what you mentioned about that practice, if you can find the motivation to get through that dip. And children have to dip too, right? Where it's like, oh, this is too hard. I don't, there's all these numbers or all these things. It's just, it's too hard. Yeah. If you can find the motivation to get through that dip, then they really can see the progress and the achievements that they're building themselves that keep them on a self-motivated path.
That's, it's so true. Yeah. Seen it over and over again and with kids, you know, of my own. And yeah, it, that's a great analogy. And I'll have to read that book. Definitely. So we're going to let Needy take a quick break, and we're going to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll have her back as we continue on this discussion. I'm excited to hear what else you have to say and to teach us. So I'm going to let her go off, and then we just want to thank Knotgrass History for sponsoring this episode of Sped Homeschool Conversations. I'll let you know a little bit about Knotgrass History. Their curriculum gives parents a flexible set of tools that you can adjust to meet the needs of each student in your family. They use a readable typeface in their books to make reading easier for students and parents. Hundreds of full-color photographs and illustrations provide a rich experience for visual learners. All their courses include hands-on activities for students who like to write, draw, build, and create. Marilyn from Pennsylvania says this about Knotgrass History curriculum. It's such a delight to see my son retain and enjoy history, especially as he's has learning disabilities that make it difficult to retain information. Your curriculum is one of our victories. You can try out Knotgrass History for free. So if you're still kind of going, what are we using for history? I want to encourage you just to try out their free samples and see if it works for your family. Visit their website at knotgrass.com, which you can see in the video, or if you're watching the video, down below me. So thank you, Knotgrass History, for again sponsoring this episode of Sped Homeschool Conversations. And I'm going to have Needy come back now, and we're going to continue talking about how to how parents can empower children to self-regulate. And we've had such a good conversation already, and we want to thank you all for being part of that conversation, adding in your comments and questions. That definitely adds some richness to our conversation because it makes it real. It's not just the two of us talking as, you know, parents with just some expert advice, but we're kind of getting into the depths of this is what we deal with every day, and it's not just in our homes, but it's in a lot of homes. And So thank you for adding your comments and questions up here. And thank you, Needy, for all the great answers you've had already and wisdom to share with us.
It's thank you for the wonderful great. Question. It helps us all think, because as parents, we're all dealing with this.
Yes, exactly. And that really takes us to our next question, because whether we've been homeschooling for a long time or this is like something we've been thrown into, I think parents can see the benefit of this reward-based system, but how can this be a way to make schedules and the things that we still see as hiccups in those schedules a little more productive in using a reward-based system and adding that in as we're kind of going along?
Yeah, so I think I think the one thing that's the one of many things that's amazing about homeschooling is the flexibility that is offered to both parents as well as students to manage how you get to certain outcomes. That it doesn't have to be, you know, as a teacher, I had a lesson objective and I had only a certain amount of time and a certain number of classes to get my students to mastery. And if they didn't get to mastery for whatever reason, they got a bad grade, you know, and that was it. And then I moved on to something else. And that grade was there for them for all of eternity. And I think the difference is, you know, when I was teaching my child at home, the difference is I was much more flexible, right? So I was saying, okay, this is a challenging topic and perhaps I'm not explaining it in the best way to learn it, or maybe you just need to take a break from it and try again after a while. And that was available to me. And I think that's when you think about kind of implementing a reward system, allowing the flexibility for you and your child to think about what the skill is, think about how long you want to work on it. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be a continuous time frame. That practice, although it's best to build habits when you do something continuously, if you need to take a break from it and then come back to it, that's also okay. And mm-hmm. and our system kind of allows for that, where you don't get penalized if you skip a week. It's just you still have that extra week to kind of build that skill at the end of it. And I think that's also sort of really important, that flexibility to develop your own skills and develop the timeline and process for how you're going to meet those goals.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think we try to, and I mean, it's a typical scenario. A lot of people who start homeschooling try to replicate what happens in the schools and their homes, and they don't take advantage of, you know, exactly what you were talking about. It's that ability to kind of step off and take some time away to gain that better perspective, those types of things. So Amy made a couple comments, so I haven't even read them through, but I'll read them. She said, thinking on the reward for effort, most work compensation is based on actual results and the effort is hard to measure. How do you gauge this? For example, what if I think my son isn't trying, there's no reward given, but he feels he was trying. Also, in my situation, I'm working with the team who implement therapy, so the team members may each have a different standard in defining effort. Thoughts or suggestions?
So one thing that I learned in corporate America is, and that was very surprising to me, except for salespeople and people at the very top of the corporate ladder, like the CEO and you know, kind of folks at that rung, everybody else gets their bonus on effort. And it's really judged on effort. So salespeople have numbers and targets that they have to meet, and that's how they get compensated. And the CEO also has numbers and targets, and his or her performance is based off of that. But as someone that, you know, worked in many different departments, I had targets generally that I was trying to meet, but if I got close to it and I put forth a lot of effort that was clear that I was working, I was innovating, I was trying to do different things, that was rewarded. So I do think there is that model in the world of getting rewarded for your effort. That is very common. I think to the second part of Amy's wonderful question is it's hard to measure effort. 100%. 100%. It's hard to measure effort. And I think, one way that we believe you can measure effort is just through a time commitment. So the way that CRED Rewards is built is you set a time commitment per day, per week, and then per a number of weeks. So am I going to work on something for 10 minutes a day, for 5 days a week, or three days a week, and then for 6-7 weeks, whatever that time frame is, you set it up front. The other part that we do that is an area of discussion with many parents is we allow the children to track their effort themselves. Now, parents have the ability in our app to kind of maybe correct the tracking if need be, but the onus is on the child to manage their own skill development. So did you do this for the day that you said that you were going to do this? Yes, I did. Or no, I didn't. You know, so that kind of practice also builds a little bit of just self-reflection of, I said I was going to do this and I didn't do it today, which means I'm kind of going to miss my week. You know, I said I'd do it 3 days a week, but I'm already more than halfway done with the week. So it doesn't look like I'm going to meet my goal. That kind of self-reflection is really important. And again, you're not penalized, because it's not that you're going to fail the skill. It just means you have to meet that skill over a longer period of time, right? You just have to do it for a little bit longer. So that's sort of how we kind of build that in. But I completely agree that measuring effort can be very difficult. And it ends up being something where all the caregivers of the child and the child need to work together to measure that effort. I mean, not just as a parent, even when I was a teacher of, you know, 40, 50 kids, it was hard for me to see if you were really trying, but it required that kind of back and forth and discussion. And most importantly, that trust that I gave to my students and my children of, well, you need to tell me, how do you feel you did on this? Do you feel like you put forth your best effort, or, you know, could you have done things differently? And that's really important, because at the end of the day, this isn't, you know, it really is about building that skill. So that, mm-hmm. that self-reflection and that ability to kind of be honest and truthful and gain the trust mm-hmm. is itself a skill. You know, if you're, yes. if your child, and my child did this, by the way, he would just kind of not be honest in his mm-hmm. tracking a couple of weeks. It was a great opportunity for me as a parent to have a discussion about that. You know, mm-hmm. I saw that, you know, you said that you journaled 5 days a week, but, you know, we shared our journals and I noticed that there were only 2 entries. So talk to me about kind of your perspective about why you thought you did 5 days. Did you mm-hmm. do 2 over 5 days? Talk to me about it. And that was an important moment for him to realize mm-hmm. that actually I shouldn't just lie, because now I'm in this uncomfortable conversation with my mom about right. how I lied, and uh-huh. this is an uncomfortable situation I'd rather not have. Mm-hmm. So that was actually a great learning. I'm glad that he did that, because it right. was a very good learning experience.
Yeah, that is a, having older kids, I'm glad they made a lot of the mistakes they did when they were younger, because we had those discussions and they don't happen now that they're young adults. Because unfortunately we do miss out a lot on those things. And Amy even said, I like the accountability of self-reporting. That's great for building character. And really that is what we've been talking about. The basis, yes, we want them to do all these things, but it's this underlying character development that you're building as you're getting them to do the self-reporting and earning these rewards. It's but I love how it doesn't go back on the parent being the one responsible, because the child can always point their finger at you and say, it's your fault. You know, and this way, just like your son, he's pointing at himself because he's the only one who's responsible. And he has that guilt that he's dealing with and all of the mess that he created. And he's the one who did it.
and I think the other kind of happy outcome that happened with this program is when you really show a child that you're giving them trust, it builds such a closer bond with that child. Even when it's like silly things like, you're going to do a chore, and, you know, there are chores that you can assign in this program. And chores aren't that important to me, but it's the trust that, well, I'm not going to go check that you did that chore. Mm-hmm. I see that on this program you said that you did it, so I trust that you did it. Mm-hmm. And that relationship, I think, is really important, because that develops into a much more mature relationship as you go on. It's not, right. I'm the mom, you're the small child that mm-hmm. listens to what I say. It's, we're in this together. This is a partnership. Regardless of age difference, this is a partnership.
Exactly. Yes, that is so true. And as they get older, I mean, I always ask people, is this something that your younger child is doing that you want them to be doing when they're 15, 16, 17 years old? No. There has to be a way you're going to train them out of this, because you don't want to be hovering over them at that age, because their behavior is going to be much worse to get it done. So yeah, working on those when they're younger and
more, you know, emotional. That's such an important point. One of the things that I noticed, especially with students with very, you know, classified as sort of mild behavioral challenges or very mild diagnoses, oftentimes certain schools and school districts, even in high school, would give them a one-to-one paraprofessional. And what you see at those later stages, especially high school, junior, senior year, is if you have a one-to-one, if you have an adult following you around every moment of your school day, you're not building that self-management and autonomy that you're going to need months from now when the school district is no longer going to offer you this support, you know? Mm-hmm. So that to me was a really big moment in my life where I realized I actually have to be building those skills much more so than almost anything else. Because mm-hmm. if my students can't kind of learn how to access support and ask for what they need, right. they're not just going to be candid support when they're older.
Right. Yeah. Very few. I mean, they have to be, usually have a pretty severe diagnosis to be assigned a one-on-one support person. I know all of my adopted siblings have that, but again, their cases are
So yeah. And so I was referring to more like mild.
Yes, exactly.
Where, mm-hmm. you know, you see that still there and you worry about, you know, what happens a couple months from now when you graduate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is so true. And I know there's a lot of discussion about, you know, helping students to write even their own IEP goals when they hit those middle school years, because they have to take ownership. And ownership is so very important. It's their life. You know, we can dictate their life for so much, but it, in the end, they know what drives them. They know what they're passionate about, and you've got to let them sit in that seat and make some decisions.
And so this, I think, you know, you mentioned this earlier, but kind of like, you know, kind of the cardboard box and building mm-hmm. Legos in order to kind of build boundaries. Mm-hmm. I think having students and children participate in building their own boundaries and giving them choices, but bounded choices, you know,
yeah.
so you have to work on something in this realm. Let's talk about what that looks like and how that can best be done. It's so important.
Yeah, definitely. That is so true. So we're talking about diagnoses. I wanted to just touch a little bit on, you know, where would, you know, certain diagnoses and reward systems, how do those tend to go more hand in hand? Or so can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I mean, so the students that I have seen so far be very successful on our program of a reward system mm-hmm. Are a couple of areas. So in kind of the IEP definition, so students with mild to moderate autism or on the Asperger spectrum, or what's classified as behavioral or emotional challenges, mm-hmm. Those students I've seen have tremendous benefits from a reward system where mm-hmm. giving that external motivation to work on something that there may not be that intrinsic motivation to kind of try, or there's some barrier mm-hmm. that's not ability or capability or built skill set. There's some other barrier that's preventing that child from trying to do something. That's mm-hmm. where reward seems to have its sweet spot. Awesome. We've also seen a lot of students with certain learning disabilities try rewards. But I think where that's really important is building that muscle to practice. Because as they practice, you know, having something that keeps them motivated, even if that practice is very challenging and it continues mm-hmm. to be challenging, mm-hmm. where, you know, if you're practicing something and you don't feel like you're making progress, that alone is very defeating.
Yes.
And so I think having a reward of, well, you may not have reached the outcome, but mm-hmm. you did work on it for this time period yes. and you still get this positive reward or positive mm-hmm. incentive, that makes you more likely to try the difficult thing again, even if you don't right. hit that outcome, because you're still going to get this positive incentive, uh-huh. you know? So
yeah.
We have tried this with students with certain learning disabilities or specific mm-hmm. learning disability, and we have seen that does motivate that increased practice.
Awesome. Yeah, that's cool. I tutor a young man in math, and he really struggles. He has memory issues, and to play a game with me at the beginning and the end of our time together is his reward. He loves to beat me, and he does. I mean, I try so hard to beat him, and I can't. but yeah, and just you know, simple things like that. But but yeah, those things that they struggle with, you just to make it more fun, make it more rewarding. It's what can make your day. So I love that. Yeah. So I want to definitely leave time for you to talk a little bit about CRED Rewards. And to just tell our viewers about it. I put in there also, you know, any stories you have to share. But Amy also had a question about that, saying, I looked at your website, neat concept. Can several people log in and award points to one child? Again, in my situation with 10 helpers who work with my son, that would be super handy. And also, if you want to know anything about homeschooling with 10 helpers, you've got to look back in the reruns of our Sped Homeschool conversation, because I interviewed Amy in July. So so you definitely want to check out that interview and how she does that.
So the answer to Amy's question, which is a great question, is absolutely. One of the tenets that we use building CRED Rewards is it takes a village. With any child, it takes a village. And so we really believe that the more adults that come together to positively reinforce a child's skill development, the better and more motivated that child will be, especially when it can be focused on a core set of skills. I know as a teacher, it was difficult sometimes for me to, you know, make sure I had regular communication with the parent. So we were both working on the same skill development for a child. It's just very difficult. The parent might be reinforcing one thing at home. And then as a teacher, I'm working on something completely different. So we're not kind of focusing our positive reinforcement on achieving kind of one key skill set. So absolutely you can. How CRED Rewards works is we have kind of a parent model and a teacher model. And I'll talk about the parent model in particular. Yeah. But basically, the parent and the child both use an app, or they can go online and do it via website. So it doesn't have to be an app. They both log in and create a profile, and they connect with each other. So now you have a connection between the parent and the child through the technology. The child either picks some of the skills that we have predetermined or can create their own. And the skills that we have are academic, social, emotional, home. So that's more like chores, as well as sports and arts related. So they can kind of pick and choose different skills, or if they don't find one they like, create their own. And again, all of our skills, they measure effort in time. So they're going to pick how long they're going to work on it per day, how many days per week, and how many weeks they want to work and track their skill. The children track their skills on their own. They can only track 2 days at a time, so today and the day before. And that was a realization in our demo when we had a lot of kids signing on a Saturday before they got their reward and clicking all the days.
So it
develops kind of a regular habit of checking in on your own development. So I can't just do it on one day of the week. I have to do it every day, or close to every day. So the kids track their skills. As parents, you would then assign a weekly allowance, that a maximum allowance. So if the child does 100% of their skills, then they get 100% of their reward. If they only did 50% of their skills, that's fine. They'll get 50% of their reward, and they have more time to achieve that reward later on.
It's kind of nice that they don't, it's like a not an all or nothing.
It's not an all or nothing. And it's really, what we're trying to do is build that value based on effort. Right. You spent this amount of time doing it, and you did this much of your goal. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. That's how much you get. You know, you get 50%. That's rewarded. It's not, oh, you only did 50%, so that's nothing. It's, you did 50%. Right. That's fantastic. So that's kind of what we built in. Kids develop, gather this allowance in our in-app currency called creds, and they can use the creds to buy things in our in-app store. And the reason why we developed an in-app store versus doing kind of a debit card or cash mentality was a couple of things. One, we found, at least before digital learning, that when kids get cash, they end up buying junk food and soda. So we didn't want this whole positive skill building mentality to then result in junk food and soda. And so what we developed was a very curated, age-appropriate and safe store that you should feel comfortable sending your child in. It has some fun technology things, like it has AirPods in there, but it also has, you know, science kits and technology-oriented items that really kind of help motivate in a positive direction. So you feel good about your kids spending your money in those places. And one thing I want to assure all parents is the way that we make money on this app is when products are purchased, that vendor gives us the retail margin. So we charge exactly what that product costs on any other store. We don't ask for more money. It's also a free to use program for parents. So there's no charge anywhere to our users. The only way that we make money is when a product is purchased. It's that retail margin that any store would get from that vendor. But it's great. I mean, the kids, I often get emails because we have a help at CRED app or info at CRED app that kids get access to. And I can't tell you how many emails I get of products that they want added to the reward store. So they'll say, can you put this on there, that on there? My mom said it was okay if you put this on there, which we're always open to. We want to make it useful. And we make it age appropriate. So depending on the age of your child, they'll see something slightly different. High school students will see one thing versus, you know, eight-year-olds will see kind of a different store. That makes sense for them. But everything that we're trying to encourage is, you know, skill building, positive behavior. We have a lot of journals and books about self-reflection and things of that nature that we include in our reward store. Yeah.
Well, you're building upon building. It's, you know, the rewards themselves are, and I think we were talking about this before we started the video, is that, you know, you're trying to build positive, them to seek out positive things for positive behavior.
Right.
And so
right.
it's just this compounding of that.
Right.
And yeah, that's awesome. Well, it's so exciting. So,
yeah, it's a really exciting thing. We also launched, you know, a teacher version of the app. And the only difference between the parent and teacher version, just in case any homeschool parents want to use the teacher version, which you're more than welcome to, is the teacher version, you would create your own digital reward store. So it doesn't have things that cost money. So you're giving points instead of money. And the points can be used for free things that you put in the app. So we have teachers that have put things like, you know, get a positive note home, or, you know, no homework day, or things that they can kind of give in the classroom.
Well, that would be great for like a homeschool co-op or a field trip group where you want to make sure that the kids are using positive behavior. And yet it doesn't cost you anything to to do that. So I love that addition, because I think homeschoolers can definitely
use the teacher version. All you would do differently is, instead of saying I'm a parent, you would log in as I'm a teacher, and that puts you in which you are. So you would go into that teacher realm.
Awesome. Yeah, I may even do that with my one student that comes over for math. So so if you're listening to the podcast and you can't see the website, it's credapp, so credapp.com. I want to make sure I spell it right for you so you get that. But that's where you can find out more information about Cred Rewards and everything that Needy's been talking about. And definitely check them out. It's, like she said, it's free to just take a peek and see how it works. And yeah, definitely you want to build up some positive character and self-regulation, which we've been talking about. And this has just been a wonderful discussion. I want to thank you for, Amy just said thank you, Needy, for all your answers and tips.
Well, thank you, Amy. And one last thing I forgot to mention is we are so open to feedback, because we developed this initially with a grant from the U.S. Department of Education, really for the purpose of building this self-management and motivational tool for students.
Awesome.
So we are always open to feedback to making this a more useful tool. One of the things that actually resulted from feedback is we now let students pick a daily emoji that kind of represents how they feel during the day, which teachers actually told me they love, because without having to ask a student, how are you feeling, they can see that there's a sad face. And so they know I should probably follow up with this student.
That's
an example of where we are very open to and responsive to feedback. And we want to make this product the best for you.
That's awesome. Just, you know, yeah, it's always in development, right?
That's right. And there's no better minds than the minds of the users and parents and teachers and homeschoolers. You know, those are the people that really know what they need. And so we got to listen.
Yeah. Ethel said, cool. And I know Creative Minds Homeschooling is watching us on YouTube, and so I hope you watch this one live. I think you caught us at the end, but watch the rerun. So I definitely want to. Media has some great information to share. So, well, thank you again. This has been such an awesome discussion. I think definitely much needed information for parents, and because we kind of feel like we're pulling out our hair. And I love, again, what you said at the beginning was, we need support. because it takes a lot of effort in motivating kids sometimes, and it's in those hard things, like you said, and to have that support system to say, okay, I feel like I'm getting the support I need now so I can motivate my kids in that right direction. So so thank you for just your work in this area, and I know you're a mom, and this has been motivated by your own children, and so thank you for just following through with that. I know it's tough work when you're homeschooling and you're running a business and you've got a new baby and all these things going on in your life. So,
well, thank you, Peyton, for creating this community. I think it's really tapping into these communities where you find so much rich insight. And as a parent, I'm in multiple homeschool communities myself, just because mm-hmm. you need that support. You need ideas from other people, and you need kind of your village to keep yeah. you afloat when things are hard, when you're in your own dip.
Your dip, yes. We can hit those every week. yeah, so true. Well, this month we've been focusing on health. And so last week we talked about just empowering healthy choices in kids. We've talked about food, nutrition, drinking water even, and how important that was. And today we were talking about behavioral health. But next week, we're going to talk about you, Mom, and how self-care is healthcare. And that is our topic next week. And I hope that you will join us. This has been, it's definitely something that's near and dear to my heart. And just the struggles I've been having lately with my health. So, and knowing we need to take care of ourselves or we're not going to be around for our kids, or at least as useful to them. So definitely join us next week for that broadcast. But thank you all for joining us tonight. Thank you again, Needy. And we'll see you all next week right here on Sped Homeschool Conversations. And thank you, Knotgrass History, for sponsoring this episode. Have a good night, everybody.
Bye. Thank you so much.